Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So happy. I feel so happy and witty and bright. All square at Anfield. Arsenal top of the tree. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Monday, 11th of March. I'm Pete Donaldson.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
What a weekend of football, Jim Campbell!
It was loads of it.
It was loads of it. Some might say too much of it. I very much enjoyed watching the West Ham Burnley match the weekend with Frank Champion, yes. Who is my father-in-law, technically, without marriage. And he's never seen West Ham win in my presence. And that streak continues. He was very upset.
That is a shame.
Had to ingratiate yourself, isn't it?
No. Danny Ings looked good, though. That's the main thing.
Does he hold you responsible?
He does, yeah. He definitely does. He pretends he doesn't, but I could see behind his eyes he's fuming that he has to come round for Mother's Day. Never mind.
Well, if they're not beating Burnley at home, I mean, it must be someone's fault, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it wasn't Danny Ings because he tried his very best. Yes. Andy Brassel, you've obviously had a weekend of following every kick of every ball in every European league.
Not been to bed yet.
Okay. What's your highlight of the weekend?
My highlight of the weekend, well, I guess like most people, it was probably the Egyptian Cup final in Qatar.
Indeed,
the only possible place for the Egyptian Cup final.
Oh, got to think of a new one now.
Totti in a tight top, I love it.
Yeah, that's right. Not just him in a tight top. Ronaldo Nazario, of course.
Exactly.
Ronaldo phenomenal. The two of them, plus Jose Mourinho, presenting the cup. I wouldn't even have known this if I don't follow Anthony Modeste on Instagram. And he was there because he plays for Al Ahly now.
Right,
Who beat Zamalek in the Cairo derby. That was in Doha. And he was stood there with the cup. And then I was like, oh yeah, I bet there are some lovely pictures of him receiving the cup. And he's receiving it off like, you don't really want to receive the cup off three people who are going to upstage the whole occasion, do you?
That's true, yeah. I mean, even if he's getting kind of shouted out, he's at the Joshua fight, I think, Jose Mourinho.
Yes.
Yeah.
With the other two.
Yeah. Oh, were they both there as well?
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
Well, I mean, Joshua made the point of sort of giving him a bit of a handshake at the end of his boxing match, or whatever you call them. And I just thought, yeah, I mean, like, Jose is a big deal, and he's a bigger deal than the Egyptian Cup final, clearly.
Yeah, but he's all about optics. Mm. So why, when you're trying to make Roma fans sad that you leave, although Daniele De Rossi might have smoothed that over a little bit since, why do you sit next to the most popular player or personality in Roma history? Mm. It's like, oh, I bet you're really sad about me leaving. but here's someone who's far more popular at the club that I've just
left. I know, but that's weird. I think it shows he's still got that power that he can just hang around with their idol like it's nothing. And also, let's be honest, probably somehow make some serious coin, because that's one thing he loves more than robbing people up the other
way. Oh, he does. Can't wait for next year's Community Shield.
Jim.
So my highlight of the weekend was a lot more pure. And obviously because Marcus isn't here, Mr. Purity himself, I feel like I need to bring this to the table in his absence. Portland Timbers obviously beat New York City FC 2-1 at the weekend, as we know, but the real highlight of that was Fizzer taking an absolutely incredible touch, just one touch as the ball flies over, just sort of gently volleys it to one of his players who can catch it and then take a throw in. He has still got it. I didn't know that he had that much to start with. But it is a reminder that he has still got it.
He was the talented brother.
I suppose he was, wasn't he? But, I mean, we've all seen the step overs and his reaction to
we've all
his
seen
baffled
his
reaction.
Everton pool table.
To Roy Keane to, you know, telling him to stop fucking about or whatever it was. Yeah. But there's just something so wonderfully Fizzer about Fizzer that means, you're right, he was the talented brother, but
do you not think,
I'm not having it.
Do you not think that kind of bit of skill, and, you know, it was a kind of a deft sort of pass in air to one of his players who was taking a quick throw-in. Do you think they still think there was a certain sort of vein of lameness in there somewhere?
Well, it's the
I don't know. Just whatever he does, the fizziness just makes everything a bit crap.
He's like a cricketer playing football.
My highlight was definitely Jesse Lingard's home debut for FC Seoul. Didn't really do much. I think he blasted one over the bar. But the best thing about it was they had to make, he was so popular shirt sales wise, they had to make a special section outside the club shop that just sold Jesse Lingard merchandise, which
really?
Was lovely.
Like when Kane went to Bayern, I was there that weekend that he signed for Bayern, and it was mad. It was the hottest weekend in Munich, and there were massive queues
like
outside
the
shop.
A Scorsese movie.
It was the hottest weekend on record, and the Kane shirts were flying off those shelves. What I like about FC Seoul is that they don't really do an amazing job on their YouTube, on their Instagram, but they do do some training sort of montages from on the YouTube, and you can hear like a lot of people speaking in English, just talking like being quite gossipy about other sides in Japan and beyond and stuff, which is quite good.
Really?
And they train right next to like a really busy highway, which is it's so unromantic compared to what Lingard's probably used to. Somebody made the point actually quite recently that a lot of Jesse Lingard's teammates lost a year in age recently.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
Because they counted through gestation. But Jesse Lingard, he's going to remain 31 for the foreseeable. It's tragic. It really is.
Worst ages to be forever, to be fair.
It's true. It's true. At Anfield, Liverpool held to a 1-1 draw in their humdinger, and Jurgen Klopp was also held in a way. Him and Klopp, Klopp and Pep hugging for absolutely ages. What do you reckon was said in that embrace, Andy Brassel? What were they whispering to each other?
I don't know, but I reckon
so
Klopp.
Happy.
I reckon Klopp went in for the hand. Shake and he's like, oh shit, he's gonna do to me what he did to like Nathan Redmond and Joshua Kimmich.
He's gonna give me an attaboy, isn't he?
I should have just waved and run down the tunnel like Diego Simeone, not even waved.
Pretend to drop your glasses on the floor. Did you see the picture of Kate Middleton? Their arm was missing. There's something going on here. Oh, God, he's so intense.
The post-matches were very interesting, weren't they? Because obviously Jurgen Klopp was asked a lot about, you know, is he going to miss this, et cetera, et cetera. And all the questions he's going to be getting for all of the season. And he sort of, he's in this nice situation where it sort of doesn't matter, does it? So he can be a bit more honest than he normally would. Not that he's particularly held back before, but we're seeing even more of it now.
So like the thing in the week with the Sparta Prague journalist, I don't know if you saw that in the press conference after the Europa League game, one of the Czech journalists put his hand up and said, if you had to sign one of the Sparta Prague players, which would you sign? You know, because they love the local question.
Yeah.
And he went, I'm leaving at the end of the season. What do you want me to do? Take him on holiday.
Yes. Good stuff.
Nice. Yeah. But so he was asked about that a lot. And obviously, you know, will he miss this atmosphere, et cetera? He's like, quite hilariously, he said yes, but you know what else I miss? My wife. But then you cut to Guardiola being asked about it, and he's like, he'll be back. He loves it too much. Pep can't sort of countenance the idea of
not
doing
things happening
this,
outside of football.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a hell of a match, it has to be said. I mean, it was exactly what we wanted for this 90 minutes of football. 1-1 in the end, Stones and McAllister with the goals. But the big talking point was obviously Doku's astonishing high sort of chest glancer, I suppose you'd call it. I mean, it was hardly Nigel de Jong, but I mean, it was high and bright, wasn't
it? That's what we could aspire to, though. Yeah. Isn't it?
It's one of those where, like, you look at it and you're just astonished it's not given it as a penalty. Mm. So you start trying to see it from the point of view of someone who doesn't think it's a penalty. Mm. So does he think that Doku's got the ball first and then McAllister's like run onto his studs, maybe?
Yeah,
like,
I just think, I mean, is it because McAllister tucks his head a little bit and takes his eye off the ball a little bit? Is that why they think that it's not a... I just can't figure it out.
I think it's just the fact that referees, as we recognise too little, a human. Mm. And you just don't want to be in the situation of giving that penalty in the last minute of such a massive game. Mm. That's all that it feels to me. I know I'm not meaning to like cast aspersions on the integrity of the officials, but it did really feel like that.
Yeah.
Because even like in the commentary, you could feel that, you know, them discussing, oh, it's a big moment if he gives this. That's not the way you need to be thinking about it as an official, do you? But I think there'll be a little bit of satisfaction there for Pep Guardiola, because we talked about this earlier in the season, the fact that Doku turns up, extremely talented, quite inconsistent, streaky player, who's got loads of potential.
That one off the post was incredible.
It was unbelievable. Man. And like that, Guardiola turns him into, you know, one of the better football players in the world, and you can see where he's going. Like, the amount he's improved this season is unreal since arriving, and it tells you everything you need to know about Guardiola as a coach. But because he loves to always do more, to innovate, he's probably sat there thinking, yeah, I could probably teach him how to defend as well. Because you could almost see that happening in slow motion. I think that's the incredible thing. You know, you think there's no need for VAR because you can say, oh no, he's going to do it, isn't he? He's putting his foot up there, he's going to do it. And he does it.
Yeah. Do you not think that they just need in the VAR truck, just somebody who's not been watching the game at all to come on, to just kick down the door.
To have
and
no
just
context.
And just, and yeah, the non-context man, and just sort of go, right. Wrong. Stop being idiots, everyone, and then walk out again. Paul Durkin.
Yeah, no, but you have it sponsored by like Ron Seal.
Yeah, does what it says on the tin.
No nonsense.
He's just
bloke.
No nonsense bloke who just turns in eating it's a McCoy's.
A McCoy's.
It's all that in the vending machine.
Only allowed one McCoy's.
That's the ultimate cliche of VAR at the moment, isn't it? Because whereas people used to talk about the toenail offside, which is disgusting image, by the way, and obviously toenails don't protrude from a football boot. They really fucking should.
And footballers are generally disgusting, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the feet are all bad, aren't they? Like dancers. The thing now is when a decision gets missed, they go, oh, you must have gone off for a cup of tea or a sandwich in the VAR booth at the time. That's become the next level of cliche hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, is there anything more scintillating? And I was really... You're excited about this kind of... these two people coming together. But Erling Haaland running full pelt at VVD. Yeah. Oh my
It was beautiful,
goodness.
Wasn't it? There was a couple of similar incidents, but Van Dijk does so well. I mean, there's such a confidence.
He's doing so well. He got his shot away. He could have done better with it.
I think...
No, but it's aura, isn't it?
I think the shot, the angles from which he can take the shot are so limited, and that's because Van Dijk's done his job so well. It's like proper like sheepdog stuff, like really, really good. And also, I think in the Diaz miss that a lot of people are saying was really bad, I think a lot of that is because Kyle Walker's on him and he makes him take the shot just slightly sooner than he wants to. Right. I think two really, really good pieces of defending in really similar situations that, you know, potentially affected the outcome of the game. Felt like a 3-3 this, didn't it?
It seems mad that
there were only two goals in it.
Yeah, I mean, what does this tell us about either team's final 10 games? I mean, they were always going to cancel each other out, weren't they, Andy?
It feels to me like Liverpool missed a chance. Missed it.
They were the better team, weren't they?
They turned it on second half. Man City just kind of really turned down the heat after they scored their goal.
But I think you've put your finger on it really there, Pete. Turned down the heat, because it feels to me that all the points in the season when Manchester City aren't miles better than everyone else is them dropping the intensity a little bit. Mm. I just feel that they create their own problems. I mean, the goal really is a case in point. It's not even the first time it's happened to Edison this season, is it?
No.
Like where he's injured himself, giving away a goal and dicking about, really, isn't it? Because he did exactly the same at Newcastle, didn't
he? Yeah, he's an underrated funny guy, in my opinion. Sure. Like, I mean, the way that Darwin rotates in the air was really, really fun. I think it was great stuff. I think it's one of my favourite giving away a penalty and then injuring yourself that's ever happened.
Yeah, it's a rare thing. But Pep Guardiola said the injury doesn't look good, so he might be out for a little while.
What did he actually do? It didn't look particularly.
It came about 10 minutes totally after, twisted, didn't it? Like as he did the kick, his ankles, his foot sort of caught and his ankle just went, you know, when you can see it go.
It would be too high profile a mistake to sort of pretend you're injured and hobble off, wouldn't it really be?
Yeah.
Not at that level.
Well, once you've committed to faking it, surely you've got to follow it through. Yeah, but true. No, I don't think he is. No.
I mean, does that kind of switching off give you a morsel of solace for your next domestic match, Jim? Because obviously you're up next.
Well, Arsenal. It's City at the Etihad is such a sort of gargantuan task that I think you'd be a little bit foolhardy to go, oh, they're going to switch off. I think you've got to expect them to be at their absolute best and prepare for that and just, you know, go in with this absolute hyper-focus and do everything that you would normally do to your own strengths as best as you can. But
they were at full strength here and Liverpool were kind of a patched-up side and they still couldn't get past them.
Could be a trap.
Could be a trap. It could be just a really, really big trick.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? You feel that, like, Liverpool's... It's not that Liverpool's lineup doesn't matter, but they've got through so many obstacles personnel-wise. You go right back to the start of the season when they've totally reconstructed the midfield. I mean, that midfield, you could argue that it's the best midfield they can put out, but it's still a totally new Premier League midfield for this season.
Really
they're still
impressive.
Getting to know each other a little bit. So even if it's the one that you would pick or Jurgen Klopp would have picked in the best case scenario, it's still a getting to know you midfield. It's not like established like cities over years and years and years. But I guess that's the thing, isn't it? When you're City and you've won it year after year after year and your dominance has been like so difficult to challenge that, you know, how do you have the same hunger for these games? I mean, I know like Pep Guardiola will say, we did, we do, we will, et cetera, et cetera. But it felt like, does it seem a bit reductive to say Liverpool wanted it more in that second half? Because it doesn't to me. It feels like City were ready to take the opportunity to win the game if it presented itself, like that Doku one that hit the post, for example. But it didn't feel like they were making the steps where they're like, right, this is how we are going to win this game. We are going to grab this game in the way that Liverpool did.
I think that they have a funny kind of almost blind spot at Anfield, don't they? They don't have a good record there against Klopp. And I think it's simply because Liverpool have a go at them in a way that very, very few teams do. And that really sort of disrupts their own game because they're so used to just strangling possession. And I know that if other teams try this, they're going to get battered a lot of the time. So they, you know, they're set up against them in the ways that they do for good reason. But it's a very unique task for this City team to play Liverpool at Anfield. And the result of it was a really, really enjoyable game.
Yeah. Jurgen Klopp said that the second half was the best we ever played against Man City, definitely. Like we said, we kind of have to agree. Kevin De Bruyne looked a little bit irked when he got dragged off in the 69th minute. Nice.
The funny thing for me about that is my initial thoughts were that if he can hold his own in a conversation like that with Pep Guardiola in the heat of the moment, Kevin De Bruyne was going to be an amazing manager.
Yes.
He's going to be another one of those like really kind of intense.
I think
like,
it was his best football adjacent contribution since that time. He got fined a ton of wedge when he played for Wolfsburg for shouting at the ball boy, give me the ball back, motherfucker. Which you shouldn't really be doing teenagers.
It just sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger or something.
Yeah.
Give me the ball, motherfucker.
Or I'll be back.
Or I'll be back.
Yeah.
Well, Pep did say on Jurgen Klopp, like Jim just said, he will be back. Speaking of Terminator 2, he loves the job too much. What can I say? He made us a better team. He made me a better manager. I wish he would be back soon because football needs personalities like him.
So what do we reckon? The two of them coming together... Brazil versus Germany 2026 World Cup.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
Into it?
Yeah, I'm into it. Yeah.
I do wonder if Liverpool might do a smart thing and replace Klopp with Jose Mourinho. Now, hear me out. Because this rivalry actually between Guardiola and Klopp has kind of possibly taken the place of Guardiola versus Mourinho as the great rivalry of his career. And obviously it's a lot friendlier, it's a lot more respectful. Jose really got under Pep's skin and essentially partially went to Bayern because of that, didn't he? You know, certainly within the realms of possibility, yes, that was the case. Maybe Jose comes in, Pep just goes, I've had enough of this. He leaves, they can sack Jose after 6 months. You know, they get the guy after the guy out of the way, get the next proper guy in.
Yeah.
You know what?
I mean, what?
And then we can all, you know, sit down, drink water, relax. He's gone.
I thought Liverpool were the good guys, again, though. They can't have Jose Mourinho in the
Well, they
dugout.
Won't need him for long. It's just to get rid of Pip.
Get rid of
just
Pip.
Get rid of Pip.
Get rid of Pip.
So we can all have a chance again.
I would say that, we're saying it now. I mean, let's just start the rumour. Jose Mourinho for Liverpool. That's what's happening next.
Well, those
young players are out.
You're saying the bad guys always win, aren't you? So
true, yeah.
I think that idea of like doing whatever you can to push Guardiola over the edge. Mm. Really interesting one. I think Jim's hit gold there.
Certainly. Yeah. Well, elsewhere, Arsenal are top of the table thanks to beating Brentford 2-1 with a goal through Rice and Havertz at the end. Huge controversy after Havertz scored the winner, having appeared to have dived. Dove'd,
yeah.
Divined.
I mean, yeah.
Earlier in the game when he was already on a yellow. Jim, you were at the match.
I was at the match.
Did you see this?
I did see it, but because of where our seats are, it wasn't really obvious to me that it was a dive at the time. It was obvious that it wasn't a penalty.
Are you Arsene Wenger in this?
I am.
I respect that. You're getting in your title zone.
But absolutely, it's a dive, definitely. Mm. I think the reason that he wasn't booked is I'm not sure the referee saw it at the time as a dive, and VAR can't intervene on yellows, can it? So I believe that might be why it wasn't given.
That's exactly why.
But yeah, got away with one there. I will put my Arsenal hat on and say I don't think his first booking was a booking. Also, I'm not sure I should say this. I walked in through the wrong door at one point, and I did hear some suits discussing what happened in the game last season, and how if anything dodgy happens to Arsenal, just let it go. And on a whiteboard, it also said Liverpool 1, Man City 1. And obviously that game happened the next day. So
yeah.
I don't know if I should say that, but
conspiracy,
that's just what
Campbell
happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were at the match with your brother Jam Campbell, Jim and Jam Campbell. You're very much like the Nevilles of the football ramble.
How dare you?
What do you mean?
The Nevilles are the Nevilles of the football world.
Sorry, yeah, that's a very good point. No, you're the Nevilles of the football ramble, you and your brother.
Are they not?
I just think it's lovely. You go to the football with your brother. It was nice. Thomas Frank said that it was a clear dive, as did Brentford's Twitter account.
Salty.
I mean, I have not enjoyed how Premier League football teams in particular, their social media accounts, that they are very salty and they're getting very tribal and very sort of childish. And
what it is, it's like outsourcing the outrage, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, well, someone else deals with this. Obviously, it's not acceptable for us to say this as a club, but if we've got some spotty Herbert doing the social media, it's fine for them to say it. And there's a step away. There's a degree of deniability there. It's ridiculous. But you know what? When Thomas Frank said it was a clear dive, I don't know if that's quite right. Okay, it was a dive. But
I think it's exaggerated contact. So yeah. There's minimal contact and he exaggerates it.
Yeah, I think, you know, so.
Regardless of what you
Collins
think
puts his leg out, as he definitely shouldn't do in that position. I don't think it's a pen. But I don't think every one of those situations, if it's not a pen, it has to be a yellow card.
That's it, yeah.
Necessarily. Mm. And if there's enough doubt there, then the referee can't book him. So maybe it should have been a booking, but I don't think it's outrageous that it isn't. Also, I think that saying that moment completely changed the match. The stuff that Brentford got away with at set pieces, especially Roslav, like just really wrestling various Arsenal players.
It was really bad. And also it was, you know, every time the ball went out for a throw, a player would go down with, you know, some sort of phantom cramp in the 55th minute or whatever.
I remember when Newcastle used to do the shouting. And to be honest, it turned up the temperature
it does.
At the Emirates.
It works.
I really enjoyed the atmosphere when teams come to play Arsenal.
Who would delay the throw-ins now that Jamal LaSalle's actually played?
You need
Matt Ritchie.
Matt Ritchie, he's too short. He can't block a throw in
with a stick.
I can't block it. He can throw it right over the top of him, for crying out loud. I mean, like, it was a really fun match, and it was a really fun match for one Aaron Ramsdale.
Eventually, I don't know if he'd characterise it as fun now. Yeah,
no, he pulled off some absolute stunners, but it was sort of saves that you know he's got in his locker. It's this kind of concentration stuff that he doesn't. doesn't have?
I mean, I think like psychology students will write dissertations on this moment for years to come, because it's a proper psychodrama, isn't it? Like, does Ramsdale make that mistake if he's been playing regularly and he's a bit more match fit? Mm. Does he make that mistake against another opponent where this sort of thing isn't in his head because it's such a unique situation? Mm. Maybe he does. He's got that in his locker. I mean, he made a similar mistake against Southampton last season, like right at the business end of things. And he may or may not have been distracted by a pigeon that was on a pitch. on the pitch. He does have this in his locker.
Well, he did something similar in the reverse fixture with Brentford and got away with it, didn't
exactly,
he?
Yeah. So,
but I don't know. I don't look at that and think, oh, that's never a mistake that Raya would make.
Yeah. No, you know? Think that Raya would do that as well.
Raya
no?
had a similar situation against Man City that he got away with earlier in the season, which obviously could have been catastrophic. So it's not like he doesn't make those mistakes, but they are more frequent from Ramsdale. They absolutely are. But the two saves he made were incredible.
Yeah.
Now, with Tony, again, it's an amazing bit of quick thinking. At the time, I thought, does he make that shot if Ramsdale isn't rattled and they're not trying to target him? But I think probably he would, because...
Well, his position.
Because he's Ivan Tony.
Because it's the only thing on. But the second save, in particular, was superb. You think Collins is nailed on favourite to score there, but Ramsdale pulls off a brilliant save. So that really is the moment of that game for me. But obviously, I think, you know, everyone's going to point to the mistake, and rightly so. And it's sad that has happened in what is probably Ramsdale's last performance for Arsenal. But also, it's great that he redeemed himself on the pitch in that game.
Well, maybe he needs a move. Maybe he will get that move at the end of the season. The whiteboard. We have to talk about the whiteboard. Somebody was on an Arsenal club tour and spotted in the Arsenal dressing room a whiteboard. And Arteta's got a bit of form in this. You know, and we presume this is Mikel Arteta's hand. I mean, I think very much this is very much right up his strata. He loves writing on a whiteboard. Last time we saw him, it was like a brain and a heart.
It's a brain and a heart holding
with
hands.
Holding hands, you know, in unity. Someone on Plato spotted a whiteboard, and instead of player positions, Arteta had basically written the player's kind of initials and their number and then a word that sums up how they feel when they play at the Emirates. And what does the playing at the Emirates mean to you? Zinchenko went for pleasure. Emil Smith-Rowe went for powerful. Party went for good. And Ben White, who probably wasn't listening, wrote all the best, Ben. he thought it was a birthday card.
He actually wrote privileged, didn't he?
Privilege. Yeah.
Would I earn this much doing anything? Probably not. Yeah, privilege, but privileged.
Yeah, I love that. And I very much enjoyed the slight detective aspect of it, just trying to figure out who's who. Interesting. He's gone for this. I mean, I think a lot of Twitter Arsenal, who were the worst of Arsenal, has to be admitted, Jim, basically said, you know, this is exactly what Arteta's about. I'm so proud of my club. So proud.
Is there not
high performance, isn't it?
It's high performance. It is high performance.
Is there not a part of you that thinks...
That wants
just,
a whiteboard?
It's just... Yeah, well, obviously. Don't you think it's maybe one of the stadium tour ushers having a bit of fun?
Apparently it was behind a barrier, which makes it feel like the Arsenal dressing room is a little bit like...
Hemingway's typewriter in a glass case.
Exactly. You know when you go to like Beamish and like you go into like an old miner's hut and there's a statue of a miner doing some cooking the food or something, and it's behind a bar and you can't go in. It just reminded me of that, like a dusty. Or when they was it Uday Hussein's when Uday Hussein died, I think Saddam Hussein encased his desk in a big glass sort of prism or something. Oh, I don't know, something like that. Good stuff. Anyway, good mention of Uday Hussein.
Uday Hussein.
Thanks, guys. Very football adjacent man. Arsenal do go on to play Manchester City at the end of March. 1 point separates the three teams with 10 games to go. Have we got a three-way? Title race?
It seems like it, doesn't it? With 10 games to go, the title race is in a really healthy position, I think. Is this the home stretch? Personally, I think 5 games might be the home stretch.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also think like what makes it the most exciting, and I don't mean this as a knock on Arsenal because they're a great team, but I think what makes it so exciting is arguably the weakest of the three teams are leading at the moment.
Yeah.
That's not to say Arsenal are weak, but I think they're appreciably weaker than Manchester City or Liverpool. If I had to pick a champion, it would be out of Manchester City and Liverpool. Well, it's going to be Man City, isn't it? But it would be out of Man City and Liverpool. So I think
beating them both, mate, actually.
I think it makes the title race even more exciting that Arsenal are on top.
The narrative around Arsenal has always been, or has been for a long time, that they'll get to this position and then choke. So they have to compete with that now.
Right.
And that's obviously another factor going in.
Like we said on Friday, we've seen Man City just steamroll for the rest of the season. They can kind of, their base level is so much higher than everyone else's. But I mean, do you mean like player for player at the top of the team, or just how they're playing or how they're overcoming obstacles in the league?
In every way.
I think
both Manchester City and Liverpool have a better manager.
Right.
I think they globally have better players. Mm. I trust them more in this title situation. All of these things. But the fact that Arsenal are in the thick of it, having missed out on the end of the season, I never saw it as Arsenal choking. But it's quite interesting hearing Granit Xhaka talking recently. He was asked last week by Archie Rintoul after the Leverkusen game on ESPN. He said, well, I've been in this position before and we didn't close it out. Mm. I was like, really? Because like this year's Bayern Munich aren't Manchester City breathing down your neck, and you are 10 points clear. And he was like, we were in the same position last year and we stuffed it up, and I'm just telling the players, I'm telling my teammates. And it's really interesting to me that a player would perceive it especially one of the key players would perceive it as that. Because I saw it as Arsenal overachieving and taking a massive step to where they want to be.
Mm.
But yeah, it's interesting that it's not necessarily seen like that.
When you're leading the league, though, it's always going to feel like that, isn't it? Now, obviously, there are various reasons behind that. We've been over before. But I think if you are Granit Xhaka or you are someone in that situation, you can't coast, can you? You have to make sure that you approach everything with every tool available to you. But so I'm pleased to hear you say that about Arsenal, Andy, because I'm just hearing Turkey as dark horses for the Euros.
I can see your knuckles turning white around your water bottle there. Oh God, I'm horny. A little bit of backstage drama. J Dubs, friend of the show, Jonathan Wilson, revealed the real officiating drama of the night. Andy Townsend was denied dinner at the Emirates for not having his food voucher. His producer had a food voucher. It was he was sort of pitch side. Andy Townsend was rotisserie chicken side, presumably. And he was denied dinner because rules are rules, Andy Brass. You must have seen some footballers' talents. Ever seen any Luko Shuvagato into a handbag? Ever seen Brian Laudrup pushing a French loaf up his sleeve?
I think this is probably the worst moment to admit that I've definitely got home from the Emirates before reaching into my pocket and found a meal voucher in the back pocket.
I thought you were going to say like a milfeu or something. that's disgusting. An old eclair.
Well, actually, I did once, when I was coming back from Euro 2012, I opened my passport to leave Poland.
Right.
And one of those hotel chocolates that I'd put in the inside of my jacket
had found its way into the chocolate, like a decorative stamp.
Basically, it had gone all over my boarding pass because this was 2012. So yeah.
Looks like a dirty protest. This is what I think.
It had gone all over my passport.
Right.
So it turns out cardboard boarding passes, which you think are useless, and it's much better to have them on your phone, they're really good at scraping hotel chocolate off passports.
Right. What a grim tale, Jim.
Very specific.
Isn't Andy
skill
horrible?
Set. Anyway. Yeah.
but have you ever seen a footballer at a buffet, Andy? Have you ever seen anyone sort of kicking around?
I'll tell you once, you'll love this. I was at a Marseille game once in the Champions League, and I had couscous and salmon at a buffet next to Philippe Albert.
Oh, lovely. That everyone knows his name.
In the Velodrome.
You don't want bits of couscous in your tash, do you?
I think I've lived all your Newcastle United fantasies in that very football stadium. I sat next to Chris Waddle in the Velodrome. I broadcasted with him there once.
Lovely.
That was pretty good.
I just... Where did Charles Ndogbia play in France before he came to Le Havre?
Yeah.
Le Havre. There is a house a couple of doors down from me, and they've just called it Le Havre. And I'm like, oh, that's where Charles Ndogbia played. Every time I walk past it, I think of Charles Ndogbia.
My wife is going to be furious when I write Olympic Lyonnais on a piece of photo copy paper and stick it up above our door.
Why not do it? Come on. All right, we're going to take a short advertorial sojourn. We'll be back with Aston Villa's Spurs and also a little bit of Palace action. We'll see you in a second.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
In terms of results, Mick, one win in 17, it can't go on like this, can it?
It can.
He had a choice there, a real fork in the road. I could be sensible and I could be grown up, but you know what? I'm going to have a bit of a giggle here.
Yeah.
That was, of course, Mick McCarthy when he was Ipswich manager. Thank you to Friend of the Ramble, Hoff, for choosing that clip. You can become a Friend of the Ramble too by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble. You'll also get Discord access where the patrons have also been chatting about different types of pie. Favourite pie, Andy?
Ooh.
Oh, God, don't just throw that.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Jesus. Because one of our producers is very upset that I went to Heart of Midlothian the other week and didn't have a Scotch pie. I was bullied into sharing a large sausage roll, if you must know.
Right, okay. Eating from both ends? Like Lady in the Tramp?
Lady in the Tramp, exactly.
Disgusting. More on the road grot from Andy.
So anyway, yeah. I feel I should say Scotch pie, even though I've never had one.
Okay.
But the real answer is steak and haggis, obviously.
Oh, lovely. I found half a bit of haggis in my fridge. I don't know where it'd come from. Yeah. I don't know where I'd eaten the other half. That'd be weird.
If you're finding haggis, I'd be cautious.
It's my part of me, being a Scotsman. right. Yeah, click the link in the show description to sign up the Patreon, please. And now it's time for an update on the Football Ramble. Acca with Betfair. Every weekend, we are placing a £10 Acca on 4-match odds, 90 markets across the football, where any winning bets are paid out in 90 minutes. So you don't need to worry about any stoppage time drama ruining your bet. Jim, you went for Liverpool and Man City to draw. Well done. They did draw.
They did draw.
You're a good man.
Thanks, mate.
With minimum amounts of haggis in your fridge.
No haggis.
Well done, mate. I picked Man United to beat Everton. Man United won 2-0.
They laugh at us, don't they, Pete? But look at this.
Yeah, look at this performance. Andy, you picked it at Nottingham Forest to beat Brighton. Brighton won 1-0.
I think Nuno will tell you it's a big conspiracy.
And finally for now, Marcus picked Aston Villa to beat Spurs, and he's not here to defend himself, but he's had an absolute stinker there because Spurs won 4-0. We'll be talking about that very soon. Over 14,000 bets that backed Palace, Sheffield United and Burnley were paid out as winning bets thanks to Betfair's 90-minute payout. Betfair have now paid out over 400,000 bets this football season thanks to the 90-minute payout. We'll be back with our next Ramble Acca on the previous show on Friday. So just buckle up, all right? Book your ideas up, Andy Brassel. I'm tired of this nonsense. This pie-riddled nonsense. Yes, Aston Villa 0, Spurs 4, as mentioned. John McGinn said before the game that this was the biggest match in Villa's recent history.
He was certainly pumped.
Oh, he was pumped for this one, wasn't he? He got sent off. Odoi like got to his feet because he was so angry, then realised, oh, he'll probably go if I'm injured, and so went back down, crumbled down again.
Yeah, I mean, McGinn's tackle was so furious that he himself like fell over in the aftermath of it. It was like a wrestling move.
It was a real swipe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He took the triple tumble, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed it immensely.
It really was a case of him trying to lay a marker down and get Villa back into the game, wasn't it? But just too much adrenaline. It's really disastrous for Villa to lose him for three games now as well. It's such a damaging...
You want a bit more of that, do you, Jim? I mean, nothing really took place in the first half, but everything went wrong for Villa in the second. Emery, I get the sense, Andy, that they didn't sort of set that team up to really have a go, because Spurs starting to look dangerous to people. You know what I mean? Like, Spurs can be quite bitty at times. And I just think do they have a reputation of being quite dangerous, and people are just kind of like sitting back and just trying to absorb as much pressure as possible?
Well, I think the thing is with Villa, it was an energy thing, wasn't it? Because they had a very, very exacting, very physical, actually, game at Ajax on Thursday night. You see, that's the Jordan Henderson influence for you.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think to face this off the back of that is really difficult for them.
Yeah.
And you felt if they were going to do anything, they would have to do it in the first half. But I thought it was really interesting how Ange Postecoglou said, you know, we sensed they were a bit tired. Yeah. They're flagging a bit, and we turned it up. And they did that really well, Spurs, I thought.
They looked a bit timid and maybe even a little bit nervous in attack, Villa, didn't they? In the first half in particular, they had a couple of chances where they kind of broke through, and just it kind of all broke down a bit, where the decision-making was quite poor. But Spurs are obviously very good at blitzing you when they smell blood. And for, you know, to go 2-0 down in quick succession in a game like that, with enough time to get back into it, is an interesting kind of psychological position to find yourself in. But obviously the McGinn red card changes that completely, and Spurs are really good at being ruthless when they need to be.
And can I suggest that maybe the McGinn red card wasn't the most celebrated challenge of the game?
Right.
You see that one by Rodrigo Bentancur, who obviously got absolutely mullered by Matty Cash in the other fixture. Like when it was 4-0, he thought, I'm far enough away from the referee. We're winning. I reckon I can get away with giving him a bit of a clap here. And it has been widely celebrated on Spurs social media. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's the nature of the beast. You just can't resist, can you? Bentancur definitely falls into that category.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was, we spoke about it being slightly toothsome Villa, and it was definitely a conditioning issue on their side. But that was, I think they will look back, if they don't manage to get anything out of the back end of this season, Villa, and sort of go, look, that was an 8-goal, Godfrey Dillinger goal different swing. You know? It's a big vibe.
Well, John McGuinn, medicine woman, said before the game, didn't he, that it was one of the biggest games they've had in a long, long time in their season, and that perhaps piled too much pressure on. Obviously, it's easy to be wise after the fact in a situation like that, but it hands Spurs all the momentum now. They've got the game in hand, and they go above Villa if they win that. Obviously, we are approaching the home straight, of course. It's visible off in the distance, and Spurs are good at that, aren't they? They're good at sort of powering through, motoring on, and they're getting a lot of players back. Madison himself is talking about how he feels like he's kind of getting back to his best. They are looking like the team that were so impressive at the start of the season at the right time.
But you're right, Jim. This is exactly how football is nowadays, because there's so many games, you have to get injured really to have a rest. You know, that's what they need. And I think the fact that you missed a chunk of Bentancur and you missed a chunk of Madison, maybe that really works for Spurs at the running. As you've said, we're running adjacent. We're not at the running yet. We need the special Jim Campbell official marker for the running.
The way you're shaking your hand there makes it look like I need to do a Graham Souness thing. Like just plant a big flag in the middle of the pitch.
Two hands.
You heard the rumour too. I mean, it was a hell of a performance from Spurs in the end. With Madison's sort of goal celebration, which we did see is darts goal celebration, does that mean he'll never score more than three? Because you only get three darts, don't you? He's kind of limiting himself there a little bit.
Yeah, I think. I think he's quite confident, actually, Pete. I don't think he'll stick it like that.
He respects the rules too much. Spurs' Pat Matessar revealed this week that he wants to take up computer science once he's done with football, he basically said, within the next 2 years, I'm going to start the lessons. It's not games I'm interested in, guys. It's the electronic stuff behind a computer.
So when someone says they're going to take up computer science, I expect them to have at least dipped a toe in it. But it's like, oh, might have a look at that in the next couple of years.
And but people are sort of congratulating him on Twitter, he's actually done it. Mate, computer science is a hard career. Good luck to you, sir. He's not done any of it. Mm. We all took a week's worth of lessons in Russian and only turn up to one. Because we started doing joined up writing, not doing it. Rubbish. Can't do it. It's hard. I mean, I do love a footballer with a second career. I mean, we've had detectives in the past. We've had wrestlers in the past.
Ian Desailly, wasn't he? Was a homicide detective in the Netherlands for a bit.
Not during playing.
To my knowledge. Maybe he was one of those people that solved crimes in his spare time, like everyone in an ITV drama.
Could have caught Frank McAvaney on one of his runs. Do you remember when he said he was a treasure hunter for a bit? Imagine he's very dramatic.
Who was a treasure hunter?
Frank McAvaney. He was found with a lot of money
treasure
in his car.
Hunter.
And he said he was treasure hunting, which was found to be incorrect. I don't think it's besmirching his bad name. Speaking of red cards in this match and outside of this match, it was quite an extraordinary sending off in Serie A for Lecce manager Roberto De Versa. They were facing their Serie A relegation rivals Verona, and he headbutted one of their players at full time as he went off. He's been predictably fired, Andy.
Yeah, one of the opposition players.
Yeah. Not his own players, yeah.
But it was, I don't know, they always say a headbutt's really cowardly. This was particularly cowardly because there were a massive scrum of people on the pitch. And he leant in towards Thomas Henry, who's quite a big guy, the Verona striker. And you know how they sort of, a lot of footballers and football adjacent people lean in for that sort of head touch?
Yes.
Yeah. He sort of leant in for that from an angle and then thought, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. While he was there. And then afterwards he said, obviously, it's not premeditated. From the Lecce perspective, obviously they came out and said, well, despite what Davos has said, this is really unacceptable. We can't have this at our club, and sacked him. I think it was a lot easier to make that decision when you've lost four of the last five and you've just lost at home to one of your relegation rivals who sold 14 players in January.
Yeah. I mean, why are footballers so bad at headbutts? I know Duncan Ferguson went to prison. I mean, I probably answered my own question there, didn't I? Duncan Ferguson did a good one and got put down. Didn't get put down, he got put sent down.
I would
sent
like
down.
To see someone
he got
try.
Sent down. Not enough lithium in the world.
Yeah.
Why are footballers so bad at headbutts? Is it just because you do get sent to prison?
I don't know. I think it does make the Zidane one all the more impressive.
Yeah.
I know that he doesn't hit him in the face, but he knocks Materazzi off his feet.
That's that's going to compound some spine, isn't it? Just really putting your head in.
It's like a
that.
Horse, wasn't it? Or like a bull.
Yes, it was, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know why they don't commit to it. Pardew obviously would be
Pardew
the...
did. Yeah, Pardew. I mean, to be honest, this
gold
Lecce
standard,
one was very
probably
much...
the silver standard.
I mean, he's the blue Stratos standard. Lecce manager, I mean, it was very much like that, really. It was very much like a little kind of head in and then just a little bit more, a couple of inches more. Anyway, we're going to turn our attention to the Crystal Palace-Luton Town match. Luton Town scoring a 96th minute equaliser to end a run of five defeats. I mean...
Robbery.
Robbery.
It's amazing. Isn't it? I think the answer to Luton's problems might be to play badly more often because they've played brilliantly and lost so many times. They were not good here and they still get something out of it.
This is the most Palace thing ever this season, though, isn't it? This has happened to them a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah. It was. I mean, I would say that I very much enjoyed the opening goal because that chance was dead
God,
and buried.
Yeah. Jean-Philippe Mateta is not someone you associate with that sort of finish.
Oh, it was a lovely little flick, but I mean, it really was something special. It was dead and buried, that chance, and they managed to get it in.
Brilliant bit of impro, yeah.
It was. Palace have now conceded 20 goals in the last 15 minutes of games this season, which is incredible.
Some might say that changing the manager in February doesn't make the players fitter.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Sonny Singhal became the first British South Asian to referee a Premier League game, which, you know, huge for representation in the game. Mike Dean, not quite so into the whole good news story. He basically gave him stick for signing autographs at half time. He said that he'd only done that after he'd reffed 300 games. Now, Mike Dean, he was like the master of pomp.
Yeah.
He was the master of the no look yellow card. The guy was an idiot.
He's also not the standard that everyone has to live by, is he?
No, it's a very good point. No. I mean, look, if we can't hear about the British Asian experience from Mike Dean, who can we hear it from? great to see, and a cracking little story there. Elsewhere, Bournemouth 2, Sheffield United 2, both Burnley and Sheffield United throwing away leads in stoppage time. It doesn't look good for either of those sides. Sheffield United did have a 2-goal lead here. And it's not looking great down there, is it, Andy, for them?
Talking of Beckham-esque, though, what about Dominic Solanke's penalty?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, it was so bad, it practically counts as a goal for Ollie Watkins, certainly in Gareth Southgate's mind.
Slippity-slidey. It was, I mean...
Don't you feel that a lot of players are wearing the wrong studs at the moment?
There is a lot of slipperiness, I suppose, maybe.
A lot of slipperiness. No,
there's a lot of terrible dross down
at
the bottom of the
Carl
league.
Maybe they're just falling over. Yeah.
Well, after the game, Chris Wilder made some really interesting comments. There is a narrative of Sheffield United being the worst team in the world. Burnley, we are all waiting for them to kick in. And Luton are going for Europe. So that seems to be the narrative. I thought that was quite observant, Chris Wilder. That's how everyone's describing how it's all going, pretty much.
Yeah, it's... Bless him.
Why is Chris Wilder like he is?
He's just...
Who hurt him?
Sheffield United, and now
United
he's back.
Sheffield United hurt him and now he's back, yeah.
Yeah, it's... he's increasingly just everyone's dad at a wedding, isn't he?
Yeah.
And it's a wedding where it's a bit controversial.
Yeah.
People don't like the groom. They've broken up before a couple of times. There's been infidelity.
Yeah.
It's actually, everyone's putting on a brave face. Everyone's trying to be good for the happy couple, but everyone's bickering and gossiping and Wilder's not happy.
So do you think he's had one beer too many before the speech?
Yeah, and it's starting to come out. Ale, and it's starting to come out now.
Mead.
Yeah, I mean, I do like it when managers get upset, and they also kind of they get upset about how they've been treated in the media, but they're the only ones who can fix this, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've felt with Wilder for a while that because he's never going to get a Premier League job again, he just feels like almost duty bound to say all the completely wild thoughts he's having. Before he gets out of there?
Well, I think when he was at Sheffield United before, he didn't quite seem this grumpy and wild.
Well, look, they have good moments in games. Yeah. And they had good moments again in this. But it feels...
Worth the entrance. Worth the ticket price.
Exactly.
Some of these moments.
It feels interesting to me that he would turn on the outside world at a moment when...
He needs to turn on the players.
Yes, exactly. It feels like, at this point, they're absolutely beyond help. Because to get yourselves in front in this way, in a away game that you're not really expected to get anything from, and to let it go in a way like they did by just not getting the basics right. Now, look, you can always say that Sheffield United are not going to have the quality, and we expected that at the start of the season. But when they start messing up the basics to that sort of degree, it makes me think, like, they know that they're not going to get out of this, and they're completely dispirited. That has got to be on him if they're getting the basics wrong, because worse players than the ones they have should not be making those mistakes, I would argue.
And also, I guess, Sheffield United, they do have the best form out of the bottom three, technically, in the last five matches.
That's remarkable,
isn't
it?
They've got that cheeky little win deep in the distance pass. But, I mean, it's very much the foundation in which he's inherited, isn't it?
Yeah,
three stinking wins.
Them and Burnley are gone, let's be honest.
They are toast. Luton Town, though. I mean, Kenilworth Ward obviously are becoming a little bit... I mean, it's becoming a little bit of a place to play football, but I mean, again, they've lost four out of the last five. So.
Yeah, and do you know what? Despite the fact they got a point out of this, they're incredibly fortunate to do so. I think it's easy to look at the narrative and say, like Rob Edwards was saying after the game, look at Luton, they never give up. Like, if Palace can shoot straight like that, that is a 4-0.
Yeah,
you know that they
like you said robbery.
They were not good, and Palace could have won that game several times over. It must be infuriating if you're Oliver Glasner. But you know, you think they'll be all right. Hopefully, they get from their perspective, they get a little bit more Michael Elise towards the end of the season. But for now, having Eze back in, and you feel that Palace have have got a bit more quality than most of the other teams down there.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a Sheffield United manager, and a good one at that, Jim, Neil Warnock. He's left the Aberdeen post.
Go out on a high.
They got their second win under the man on Saturday, beating Kilmarnock 3-1 to reach the semi-final of the Scottish Cup. And in his post-match, he left. He basically said, I'm stepping down. He was there for 33 days. And I think you could tell in the post-match that he was willing to give a much more diplomatic, I think, version of what state Aberdeen are in, yeah. I think. And fair play to him. He's a cut above some of the usual outspoken managers you sometimes see over the border, would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think so.
He would be telling it like it is at this point, going, this is a fucking shit state.
Maybe Derek Adams can take over. That would be good. He's available. I mean, Warnock said, didn't he, that he wanted to win the Scottish Cup because he's never won a cup before, and that was his aim. So, you know, he's got them to the semis, which is something. Shame he's not stayed around. Is it the commute? Is it just the commute?
I
don't know if he was living there, was he?
Well, they've been pretty wretched for most of the time that he's been there as well. I mean, Aberdeen have put out this statement today, and they've been talking about their review of the whole football business, and they've appointed like some big name to lead the review. This guy Bernard Peters, who like put together Hoffenheim, going back in the past, he's really really respected in German football. Right. So they've clearly spent a bit on doing a proper review, so they know what they're doing going forward. But I think a lot of Aberdeen fans are just really anxious about the fact that, you know, they've been left without a coach again, and Aberdeen are talking about getting to the international break and then appointing a coach during that. And it's like, well, shit, that's still a couple of weeks off, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, it feels a bit fractious at the moment.
Will he be at the cup final? Do you reckon, Warnock?
Who knows? Pop up,
just
with
to sort of
old Whack and Neil. Pops up everywhere.
Pops up everywhere, yeah. I mean, where next for Neil Warnock? Obviously, he said that he was retiring, and then suddenly he pops up in Aberdeen. I think he would make a really good kind of, well, maybe like a Beamish museum guide. You know, just sort of showing people around. He's got like the earthy notes that, you know, York's Railway Museum requires, I think.
Yeah. I would like to see him sort of...
Fish and chip shop.
No, I'd like to see him
sort of... scraps of that, son.
Presenting like some sort of shiny flawed Saturday night TV show.
Right, like Andex commercial breakdown.
Because he would have been that sort of figure perhaps in the sort of 70s or 80s, like hosting some sort of talent show.
Generation game.
Like from maybe like a working man's club.
Yeah.
But just give it a budget, put it on ITV, see what happens.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, look, basically, while he's safely caged...
No lighty.
Oh my God, yes.
Perfect.
Bring back Take Me Out.
Yeah.
While he's safely caged in football management, it feels like it's good that he's not on Soccer Saturday.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So, I'm definitely down with Jim's suggestion.
Remember when he started that podcast and he was recording the first episode in like an airport lounge? He had like a computer set up and there was people walking behind him. It was very bizarre. The acoustics were atrocious.
I might have done OTC like that a couple of times with a better microphone.
Oh, to be fair, yes, you did do it a few times, but you weren't hosting the bloody thing, were you?
No.
Anyway, thank you very much for everyone listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Andy and I will be back tonight for the Loic Remy derby, the Chelsea versus Newcastle match. Ramble Reacts, join us later. You can follow us on X, TikTok, YouTube and Instagram at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify. Andy Brassel, say farewell for now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Jim Campbell.
Goodbye. Permanently, by the sounds of it. What's happening now?
Well, I'm going to take you around the back of the farm to say goodbye to you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Show some fucking respect.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real Championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app.
and hit subscribe.